Tracy Thompson's new book, New Mind of the South, looks at the American South and its ability to adapt and transform itself. It addresses changing demographics and agrarian renewal, but also touches on the big lie of the South and Southern mythologizing. Tracy Thompson, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the South has a lot of racial history to deal with, including slavery, segregation, the Civil War. And that's where the big lie comes in, that the Civil War was not so much about slavery, but rather about states' rights. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, before the Civil War, Southern Confederate leaders were quite explicit that what they were fighting for, what they saw as the issue at stake, was the perpetuation of the South's economic system, which was, of course, based on slave labor. After the war, they pretty much right away started taking another tack, and it's kind of understandable in human terms, I guess, having suffered this horrifying defeat and economic catastrophe. They started trying to recast their effort as a noble attempt to defend the principle of states' rights, which is true as far as it goes. It just doesn't go far enough, since the issue of states' rights would never have come up if it had not been for slavery.
Almost a PR campaign.
Right. And, you know, this was in response to the enormous losses the South suffered during the war. I mean, there was hardly any family in the South that had not been touched by the Civil War. Unlike the North, you know, the South just didn't have as many people as the North did. So, you know, you can kind of see the psychological underpinnings of this, but the result was that after a few years, you started seeing organizations like the United Daughters of the Confederacy and the Sons of Confederate Veterans, who really worked assiduously to make sure that this version of history was put across to school children in public schools. They even monitored what professors were saying in colleges. They worked vigorously to make sure that all Southern kids grew up with this understanding of the war. And it was a very successful effort, to the point that to this day, there are polls which show that roughly half of all Americans believe that the cause of the Civil War was the issue of states' rights.
And so this is something that's not just contained in the South, but really has seeped outside of that region of the country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not confined to the South at all. In fact, there's very little difference in the polling numbers between North and South or West or whatever. It's a widely held point of view. And it's it was also sort of, in a way, perpetuated by government entities like the National Park Service, because for years and years and years, the National Park Service was, of course, it's funded by the government, and for years, Southerners controlled the purse strings in Congress. So they weren't going to do anything with historical exhibits that ran the risk of offending Southerners.
So how can the New South, the modern South, how can that address this traumatic history in a way outside of mythologizing it?
Well, I think that that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, was just realizing that for the South to come to terms with its own history, it has to know what that history is. And I think part of this effort has to do with racial reconciliation groups in the South, which are kind of grassroots efforts that have sprung up over the past 10 or 12 or 20 years, dealing with little-known chapters of history like the Wilmington riots of 1898 or various lynchings that have basically been unrecorded by history. I think there's an effort going on now with the passing of the civil rights generation to sort of do a summing up and try to figure out where we stand with all this. And it's an interesting phenomenon, and I think it's a very helpful one, too.
Now, and African Americans left the South during the last century to seek opportunities elsewhere, but now they're returning. How is this affecting the New South, and is this part of this these racial reconciliation groups that you're talking about?
No, those are two different phenomenons. But the black remigration has been going on in the South for several decades now, and my hometown of Atlanta is Exhibit A. Just in the first 10 years of the 21st century, they had more than 500,000 black new residents in the Atlanta metropolitan area alone, which is kind of a staggering number. And I just think that bespeaks of the South's pull on people and the fact that Southerners, black African Americans are Southerners too. And many of them have family roots in the South, even if they were born in Poughkeepsie or something. They often have grandparents or relatives that come from the South. And they just find the South a nicer place to live. They call it home too.
How has this changed racial dynamics in the New South?
Well, in some ways, and I know that a lot of people outside the South are, you know, may laugh at this, but I think in a lot of ways the South is the most racially progressive part of the nation, which is not to say that racism does not still exist, because of course it does. But in a city like Atlanta or Houston or Memphis, for instance, black and white people have lived and worked together for years and have achieved a way of governing cities and municipalities together and in ways that you don't see in other parts of the country, simply because the black population is less in other parts of the country.
Now, you also touch on the impact of Hispanic migration to the South. Mm-hmm. How have these newcomers helped shape the New South?
Well, that remains to be seen. It's really too soon to tell how this will all play out. But it's interesting to me that a lot of the cultural values of many of the newest immigrants into the South, which a majority of which are Mexican, fit in very nicely with Southern values. These are socially conservative people. They come from a rural part of Mexico that is marked with small farms. They're very religious. They go to church. They place a great deal of importance on extended kinship networks. And all of these are very Southern values. There's obvious differences, but in some ways they fit in quite nicely.
Now the South, like much of the United States, has seen big farms replace the small family farms. How is the Southern agriculture shift different from elsewhere in the country?
Well, the rise of big agribusiness entities and the demise of the small family farm is a national phenomenon, or global phenomenon, actually. The difference is that in the South, the kind of demographic changes that it's creating is marked along racial lines. The rural areas of the South are emptying out, and what you have left are vast zones of kind of the haves and the have-nots. And a lot of these are kind of skewed toward one race or another. In the Black Belt or in the Mississippi Delta, it's predominantly African American. In the mountainous South, it's predominantly Caucasian. And the problems that are associated with this are really pretty daunting. These are areas that go into this economic death spiral, and it's hard to see how they're ever going to recover.
How has evangelical Christianity changed in the New South in the past decades?
Well, when I was a kid, it really didn't matter all that much if you were a Methodist or a Presbyterian or a Southern Baptist or a Holy Roller or whatever. There were certainly stylistic differences and theological differences, but, you know, to an outsider, they weren't all that great. You had a core set of beliefs that were evangelical and Protestant, a belief in the Second Coming and the need for rebirth in Jesus and coming to terms with Jesus and a personal salvation experience. The difference is that today some of these denominations, particularly the Southern Baptists, have undergone painful schisms, and these days political elements enter into religion in the South in the way they never did when I was growing up. Religion was pretty apolitical when I was a kid in Atlanta in the 60s. But these days, you can sort of tell a fair amount about a person's politics by what church they go to. And for that reason, evangelical Christianity is not the same kind of cultural uniting force that it used to be. And that's a huge change.
Do you find that politicization is driving people away from some of these churches?
Well, the mainstream denominations have been losing membership for years, and that's not just in the South, that's all over. It's really kind of too hard to tell about that. You're getting there into, you know, trends in church membership and stuff, and that's outside my area of expertise. But what's interesting to me is that in the South, its churches have become less denominationally identifiable and more identifiable by worship style. You know, you have churches that are obviously very traditional, and then you have churches that are kind of like rock concerts, and you have mega churches, and you know, it's just all very, very different. There's a whole range of options out there these days.
Now, you dug through a lot of historical records in your research. Was there anything in particular that surprised you?
Well, I guess there were little surprises all along the way. I was surprised to learn, for instance, the extent of Unionist sentiment in the South during the Civil War. I had always thought that, well, that was a phenomenon of the border states in East Tennessee and maybe one or two counties in Alabama, but actually there was quite a lot of it, and there were all types of Unionists, too. I've been surprised to see the extent to which the rural areas in the South are becoming depopulated. It's really kind of apocalyptic in some areas. You just drive for miles and don't see a soul. And the effects that large agribusiness is having on the rural South. And then going to my old hometown of Atlanta, the degree of wealth inequality that is apparent just to the naked eye these days is really very striking.
Now, we're here in southeast Missouri, Cape Girardeau. We're actually located south of southern cities like Louisville. Would you consider southeast Missouri, or Missouri as a whole? Is that a southern state? We've been wondering.
Yeah, well, I bet you have. It's been kind of a question for quite a while, hasn't it? My own definition of the South was totally arbitrary, and the only way that's defensible is that everybody's definition of the South is arbitrary. What I did to define the South was just to limit it to the 11 states of the old Confederacy, which would let you guys out, and then lop off certain parts of even that to adjust for more recent demographic trends, you know. So I would include East Texas, but not West Texas. And I don't include Southern Florida, because that's really not Southern, but the North Florida and the Panhandle of Florida is very Southern. I mean, you can, I talk about that in the book, about exactly how I did it, but you have to draw a line somewhere, so that's where I drew mine. I realize it's not going to include all the complexities, but you got to just draw a line somewhere.
Tracy Thompson is the author of New Mind of the South. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.